You're listening to the Patient Experience Blueprint with Entyvio.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Patient Experience Blueprint. We are super excited to have you and our special guest here today. For those that are new to the Patient Experience podcast, this is a great time to listen in on some of the experts we bring on to our podcast to share about how they are disrupting the patient experience in their field. So today, we're super excited to have Laura Alexis here. She is the CEO and founder of POP Recovery Systems. POP stands for Patients Over Profit. And we couldn't be more thrilled to have you today with us, Laura. Maybe you could start off with sharing us a little about yourself and your journey of creating POP Recovery Systems.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Josh. I'm so excited to be here. I think that this will be maybe only my third podcast, but the first time doing a podcast with someone I really didn't know before. So
when it comes to that.
So I started POP because of my own journey back in 2020. I was a newly successful entrepreneur in the real estate space, and my first company did seven figures in its first 90 days. And so I was like, oh, I'm rich. I'm going to buy a condo. I'm going to get a car. And I'm going to, you know, have plastic surgery. I had always struggled with my weight, up and down weight since I was young. Then I had my daughter and, you know, things happen to the woman's body when they have kids. And so I said, I said, I'm going to do what the rich people do. I'm going to have surgery. I'm going to wake up. I'm going to look like Beyonce and boom, we're there. And so, you know, I did have the surgery. I had a great surgeon. I had an amazing team. At that time, I still had my same personal assistant, 6-year anniversary. We celebrated this month, actually. And so she did everything for me, literally down to the instructions from the surgeon. I did not read them. I was like, hey, Andrea, read these. Tell me the important parts. Make sure that they are organized. That is how not serious I took the experience of plastic surgery.
You were entering it. I mean, I think there's a little bit of that for a lot of people going to surgery. Is like it is a new experience. It's something that people aren't doing every day, unless you're an oral surgeon. But I do think a lot of people kind of enter into the unknown and really do feel overwhelmed. So I don't think that's that unfamiliar of a story.
Well, thank you for that. You made me feel a lot better because the more I learned over these last 3 years, you know, I was like, man, I was a really bad patient. Like, I was a nightmare. But, you know, when I woke up, it was the recovery time. And my assistant was like, hey, stay away from salt, stay away from spices, no wine, you know? And I was like, wait, what? I have to do all that. And so she called one of my friends who was a nutrition coach. And she said, look, Dominique came up with a plan for you. Brian, he's going to help cook for you. So that's all done. She's like, but you know, you need to eat those foods. And I was really depressed about that because I liked help more bountiful kind of foods and fried foods. And, you know, for me, it seemed like a small deal, but in that moment, it was a big deal. These comforting things were kind of taken away from me. And so my post-op blues turned into a deep depression, suicidal thoughts, which I could not understand because I had the best life, so to speak, right? My daughter, beautiful home. But it finally, I said, okay, enough is enough. Let me get some help. And it was through that healing journey that I learned that when you have trauma to your body and like a surgery, it can come sometimes reopen things that you had not dealt with. And that's what was happening to me. And so once I was in that therapy for about 3 or 4 months, I was like, wow, I'm feeling great. And then my entrepreneur side kicked in again. And I was like, I wonder if there's anything out there that supports patients who are going to have plastic surgery through the pre-op phase of understanding the process and preparing the process, supporting through the surgery and then after. And there was nothing. And so that's how I created POP Recovery Systems. I hired a bunch of licensed therapists, registered dietitians, white glove service concierge, and we created this recovery as a service model, which is the first of its kind. And we just recently were patented as the first RAS model in the industry, not only for plastic surgery, but now we're dealing with bariatric surgery, orthopedic surgery, vascular surgery, you know, all high risk surgery, because man, go find out. People need support when they're having these transformational surgeries. Sometimes they aren't as prepared, and even their caretakers aren't as prepared. And that's where we come in. And it's been an exciting journey so far. It's been extremely new. So at first, it was kind of like the surgeons that I was talking to, they were like, yeah, we see that. But, you know, that's like a them thing. Like, it doesn't have anything to do with us. But now it's evolving to like, actually, no, this is affecting our bottom line. This is affecting our quality of workplace. This is affecting efficiency. How can we, you know, especially with value-based care, how can we really create an experience, the patient experience, that's going to take standard to the next care? And I'm so proud to be, you know, the head of such a movement, because it definitely is disrupting. My PR, she said that in the very beginning when we first started working together, she said, this is an industry disruptor. And I was like, yeah, but we're going to do it anyway, not really knowing what I was up against.
Well, it's sounding like this is definitely something that was brought on to you through a personal experience. And I think, you know, often those are, you know, those lived experiences are the ones that kind of have a scar, hopefully is motivating, and that lives much longer than the actual surgery itself, and drives you to want to change that environment. You know, I think oral surgery is very similar in a lot of those scenarios to what you explained with plastics or orthopedics. And I personally have had two orthopedic surgeries on my shoulders. My son actually recently had oral surgery, and you know, for being someone that's, you know, working with oral surgeons, one in five in North America, you think there'd be no better person than myself to be prepared of what that means, what the journey is pre-op, post-op recovery. And, you know, all of the last 15 years of Intibio just threw out the back window as soon as my son entered that office and started that journey. And I think it's really interesting how life gives you these reminders. And, you know, the first reminder I had when I was much, much younger, before children, was that at the end of the day, if we don't improve the experience for patients, we as patients are left holding the bag. And then to relive that experience as a father to a child is like 10x. I mean, only people with kids understand what they will do for their child is infinitely greater than what they'll do for themselves. And I just think that this is a challenge that needs to be overcome. And I really do fundamentally believe that this sort of engagement actually produces better outcomes. If patients are more informed, if they feel like they're, you know, collaborators in their treatments rather than subjects of their treatment plans, they're going to be more motivated to make sure they're doing everything to prepare and make sure that appointment goes off as successfully as possible.
I agree. I love everything that you're saying. I'm like, going to get a clip of that.
So what does patient over profits mean to you? How does that drive your decision-making? Like, where did you establish the guardrails of this is what we do and this is what we don't do?
Yeah. So it's crazy because now, you know, recently I've been having discussions with, you know, PE firms and venture capitalists, and they're like, what's this patients over profits? Like, this isn't a nonprofit, is it? And really it's meant to be, you know, patients are more important than the profits. I made this as a patient, mm-hmm. you know, and there were a lot of things that I suffered through that I think could have been different had I been better prepared and had I had a system like the one that I created. And so it just means that when it comes to if I'm going to work with a cosmetic surgeon over a board certified plastic surgeon, that's not going to happen. If I'm going to be, you know, if there's a chop shop, which is like a multiple high volume where they aren't really careful about cleanliness or safety, I don't care how much money that will make the company. I am not going to partner with that facility. And so we probably could have been places a lot faster financially had I not drew that line in the sand. But it's extremely important to me that the patient experience and the quality and them feeling heard and appreciated and advocated for is at the forefront of the company. And it's possible. We can have both. We can still advocate for the patient, give them the best experience, and make tremendous profits. That for me means that I'm not willing to choose. I feel like I can have both, whereas the patients come first. So that's really what it means to me.
I think there's a huge market for that. You know, I talk to thousands of dentists and, you know, on behalf of our company and, you know, within our company, we talk to several more. And there is an agreement, a very strong feeling that patient experience is at the core of what healthcare providers give to their patients. And, you know, I think often it's the day-to-day that kind of removes them from the understanding of that patient experience. Because, you know, I did a podcast, or it was actually a webinar with a bunch of offices about a year ago. And we just talked about, you know, for an oral surgery office to operate successfully, they're essentially managing dozens, if not 100 treatment plans at various stages with differing people, have differing feelings about the treatment they're providing. And it's really easy, because you're doing surgeries all day, that you have a process that you just fall into the mundane and you forget the fact that every single appointment, this is likely a life-changing, life-altering appointment. And this is coming with considerable baggage and feelings and emotions and recovery. And that's just lost because of all of this is their mundane. This is their everyday. And I remember when I'll never forget this. I was just about to go under for my shoulder surgery. And I shouldn't say the doctor's name, but he was an awesome doctor, great surgeon, had successful surgeries. But they're rolling me into the operatory. And I see the doctor who's making friendly comments with some of the nurses and laughing and giggling. And I remember going in there, so I'm like, doesn't he have like a book to be reading about my surgery? Like, shouldn't he be prepared? And she's like, this is like brushing his teeth. Like, this is how mundane it is for him. This is what he does 4, 5, 6 times a day. And you have nothing to worry about. And it's like, okay, I logically got that, but I didn't feel it as I was being strolled in. I think that's, it's really helping our providers understand that although it's mundane and it's just, you know, another day, another Tuesday for you, this is a, you know, hopefully a once in a lifetime thing for your patient, and to really have a level of sincerity in how you deal with them throughout that process. And I feel like that's often what's lost. And it's because of so many missing parts, so many things that need to be followed up on and checklists that need to be, it becomes very clinical and sterile, where that's almost the opposite of what a patient needs at that time.
Yeah, I agree. And it's one of the parts of our process, especially on the mental health side, is making sure that the narrative that you have is true and not one that you're just feeling, but that it's actually factual. So in our different touch points before surgery, we're really letting them know that your surgeon, he's done this thousands of times. And because of that, they may seem stoic or this way or that way. None of those things matter as much as you being in the moment and understanding what your goal is and what your why is. And so, you know, I believe that had you gone through something like we have, when you saw that, you would have thought to yourself, but what did Stacy say? You know, like, they're going to be busy, but this is my moment. And this is, you know, and she obviously can do it better because she's licensed and they have their whole routine. But I just think that those are things that us as humans and us as patients, that's what we look at. And if we don't have the right narrative and we aren't told the right story before we go, it will change the way that we think about things. I remember when I got pregnant after my first surgery, surprise baby. And so I've very mentally well now. And so I said, okay, I'm going to get my revision done. And I was just so calm. And this was big for me because they were actually going to do like general anesthesia. I've lived overseas for 10 years, and in other countries, it's not always necessary to go all the way under. This will be my first time at this time going all the way under. And that was something I really had to work with my mental health coach with, because I was like, I could die, you know? And other times I could die too.
That's not a completely unrealistic risk. I mean, it does exist. And, you know, as you age, fortunately, I think we're both fairly on the younger, low risk side of that equation. Yeah. But if you're 60 years old, you seriously should weigh whether it's worth being put under or whether local anesthesiology is a better route for you. So I don't think all this stuff's naive, but once again, these are irrational thoughts because you're put into it in a situation that you don't know all the facts, and you do hear someone talk about maybe advice that was given to their geriatric parent, and you think it's exact same for you when it's not. So what I thought would be kind of fun is, you know, kind of role play my experience a bit. Let's pretend it wasn't oral surgery and it was plastic surgeries. But like, how would I as a patient hear about you? Would this, like, if I'm going in for, would I get referred from like a provider towards a plastic surgeon, or would you help me in the choosing of the surgeon? Where does your...
There's two ways.
Yeah.
So there's two ways. We have our straight to patient, and they can find us on YouTube. We have a podcast. We have tons of ambassadors that have used our programs. We do a lot of work in the weight loss to plastic surgery area with massive weight loss patients. So they find us. We do a consultation with them. We find out their goals, and we help them find the provider, the board certified provider that's going to be in their budget and within their location boundaries. And then on the other side, which is something that we've really focused on this year, is we partner with the provider. And the provider actually includes the model in their surgery, which is the best because the patients are just like, wow, I get all of this. Like, I get my own mental health coach. I get my own nutrition. I get my own concierge and wound care. Like, that's unheard of. But we actually come with the surgery, which is something that we are really going to be focusing on because the patients don't know what they don't know. Just like me, I didn't know what I didn't know. But the surgeons and the providers, they know. They've seen this thousands of times. They know what a high anxiety patient looks like, and they know the times where they slip through and they think that they're not high anxiety, but they become high anxiety in the post-op. And so what we've really been able to educate the providers on this year is don't wait to find out. Let us help you identify and support. But more importantly, this is a huge, like, care navigation, value-based care. It's a huge part of healthcare, and it's becoming more important than just outcomes. The experience is becoming more important, right? So this is the standard for us and what our focus is that it should be going up to. You know, when you said something, I was thinking about my own oral surgery that I need to be done. She made me a plan. She hasn't sent me the plan yet so that I can read it. I last saw her like 6 weeks ago. I need to go over that plan so I can understand it. And then we need to set our date. Now, I know that I can get my assistant at any time to get that ball rolling. But you really think that I'm in a rush to do that? Because I'm not really in a rush to get these four taken out. But if she had our services, she would have already people in place. I'd be like, hey, did you get your care plan? Oh, you didn't? Let me get it to you. Do you have any questions about it? Because I have concerns. Like, how long do I really need to wait before this tooth starts affecting the other tooth? Can I do it in June when I don't have to travel for 6 weeks because I have conferences until then? But since they're not calling me, I'm not calling them either. So this is all a part of the experience. They're missing out. They may be busy, but they're missing out on right now me finishing getting my molars and then my husband filling the rest of his cavities because we're going to do it at the same time. So that business is not happening or it's being delayed. You know, another dentist could swoop in at that time, which I'm not going to because I love this one particularly. I just love her office and her vibe and everything. But you know what I'm saying? Like, those are the gaps within the office that we're filling and while enhancing the patient experience.
I think to your point, every single situation's unique and, you know, there's going to be no mold that fits them. So safe to say, as far as POP goes, I could be a patient who I just know I'm anxious and I want to reach out to POP to help me find that provider. And whether, or even if I had a provider in mind, but I didn't really want to navigate the journey alone, you could help me from someone who's not affiliated with POP systems.
That's correct.
But additionally, I could also come to you and you could say, these are, 10 surgeons that we recommend for your treatments because every patient uses POP there. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we usually give them three suggestions, and it's based on their location, their budget, and their expectations. Because you want to make sure, especially in plastic surgery, that you aren't trying to look like something that is not possible for you.
Yeah.
So we kind of have to manage those expectations. We usually work with a patient for 6 to 8 weeks before we move forward, putting down a deposit and choosing a surgeon. Because we also help them. We don't go to the consultation with them. That's rude. But what we do is we go through the quote with them and we tell them what questions to ask the surgeon. And we go over those answers with them. We give them a questionnaire. Hey, this is what you want to ask each one. And one thing that we always tell them is you have to feel like this is the person who's going to change my life. The bedside manner matters. The friendliness in the office matters. Start greeting from that first conversation with the receptionist. All of that matters because this is a very special situation for you. You know, it might be repetitious for them, but it's special for you. And we recently started helping someone on their hip surgery journey. And it's the same thing. You know, I was nervous at first. I was like, oh, I don't know. But now we're going through the process and I'm looking at the reports and I'm getting the feedback from the team. It's the same thing, different surgery. So that makes me really good, feel good because it's duplicatable.
Yes, but I mean, it may feel less elective than maybe a cosmetic or a plastics, but it definitely has all the same uncertainties, the unknowns, and maybe even more of them because it is a less, more obscure surgery. So definitely see how this is valuable. I mean, I'm hearing a lot of things. I'm thinking, you know, is this someone personally holding your hand through this process? How have you enabled technology to take away some of the human hours required to serve these patients? Because I imagine some of this is replicatable through technology. Maybe you could share about how your platform plays into this.
Yeah, so we actually have an amazing partnership with an EHR called Simplast, and we also use their CRM. And so they customized our system for us because it's so different than anything that's ever existed. And so, yes, they do have their own concierge coach and all of those actual humans, but in between, it's all AI doing all of our appointment setting, doing our messaging in between. We do actually do the manual touch points because we will check in with them on a weekly basis because people really need that when they're going through that, just to know that someone's on the other side. But like the monthly ones, those are done through AI. And like we're working on getting AI for when someone, you know, first calls and they just need to get sent to have an actual Zoom consultation for the first time. My chief strategy and operations officer is a data AI technology, like she's the queen, and she goes to all of the conferences. My chief information security officer, same, big data nerd, huge cybersecurity, AI, you name it. So together, they're the ones who made us such a technology company. Because me, I was like, we're just going to help people. And they were like, you know, well, we need to do this efficiently. Oh, by the way, they're also my parents. And they absolutely love what they do, not only because it helps move the company forward, but it helps realize my dream because we want to be able to see as many patients as possible, but not have our coaches get burnt out from that mundane. So if we can get technology to do the mundane and only have them do the human parts of the caring and the loving and the supporting and the guiding, then it makes their job more enjoyable as well. A lot of them have told me, I've worked in hospitals, I've worked at home health, I've done hospice. This is the best because I really get to make a change, see a change, and be a part of someone's transformation.
That's awesome. What's one of the biggest challenges you've had in this organization that you've created? What's some of the hurdles you've had to overcome?
Educating the providers and really just making them understand that the last 50 years that we've done things, just because we've done it that way doesn't mean it's okay. Mm-hmm. That has been the biggest challenge. And what I've been able to see this year with all the conferences that we've done and the talks that we've done is that people are really starting to get it. They're starting to understand that mental health is a big part of these transformational journeys. That and just making sure that we get enough consumers who have eyes on what we're offering. Everyone that I ever talk to, they're like, this is great. I wish I had this for this, or I wish my mom had this for that, or my dad just had his shoulder and he couldn't golf for like, you know, X amount of time and it drove him crazy. This would have been great for that. Athletes I've talked to, wow, this would have been great for me when I had that injury, you know? And so it's just, that has probably been the hardest thing. How do we get the word out as fast as possible to as many people as possible so we can make the biggest impact as possible?
Yeah, I think for myself, you know, I was dating myself a little bit. I was like 20 years old when I had my first surgery, 23 on the second one. And that was a really crappy time for me. You know, I couldn't play hockey. I couldn't scuba dive. I couldn't snowboard. And those are all things I'm extremely passionate about. I like, it's part of, you know, as having a family, that's kind of taken that primary spot. But at that time, that was really what I lived for. I loved doing these activities. And, you know, that 9-month recovery post-surgery, I was not equipped for, you know, the mental challenges that come up with every day, essentially, you know, having to deal with the medications and then weaning off the medications into recovery. And, you know, there's only so much time you can sit around staring at the wall doing your, you know, your physio exercises before you do go a little stir crazy and you start to, you know, not have the best mental attitude towards the recovery. And I think if I had something younger, you know, that would have been really helpful. You know, as you get older, you create more support networks. You have your family or your friends that can kind of fill some of those gaps. But I think a lot of, you know, younger athletes that go through some of these challenges don't have that network. They're either at college in a dorm trying to recover or they're living on their own. And those are not conducive to really great recovery systems. You talked about a little bit about the two-sided marketplace is kind of how I define that in the business model. And it's sounding like the patient side is a lot more approachable than the provider side. That is the challenge, is getting the providers to see that, you know, the old way of doing things, although it may work or had worked, it's not going to be what, you know, drives you into this modern age of what people expect in patient care. And it has changed, I think, exponentially since COVID, for sure. There is a requirement for patients to have access to more information. You know, like being handed 50 pages of forms and consents to fill out as you leave isn't really the best way to get you to commit moving forward. So it's great to see that you're equipping these providers to understand where their gaps are, how you can better support them. What's some of the feedback you hear from the provider end, from people that, you know, maybe were a little bit, this sounds expensive, or, you know, why should I change my processes, to after the fact, you know, living this new normal? What's some of the feedback the providers give you?
Well, like one in particular is our own medical director. I started with her at the very beginning and she was very skeptical. I actually, she spoke at our first event for a speaker's fee. Like, it wasn't something that, you know, she was gonna spend time on. I only say that because I want to show you the transition. Like, for a speaker's fee, she spoke at an event because she had surgery herself, right? And was like, I went through this and this is important. But it was still like, yes, this is important, but that doesn't mean I'm going to do POP. And then I actually introduced her to one of our ambassadors who had our program through her surgery that she ended up having with the same surgeon, Dr. Rednum. And so she had her surgery and she saw firsthand what we did. And then she was like, oh, wow. This is amazing. This patient, this was a big surgery. We're talking 360 body lift, floor de lis with, you know, 8 pounds of skin removed, you know, and so it's a lot. It's a big recovery. She was coming from Oklahoma going to Texas, so there was travel involved, and she did really well. So she said, okay, well, let's start with your out of town and our weight loss. That's where we'll start. And that was at the beginning of 2024 that we started that. And go fast forward to Q4 of 2024. She had 3 record-breaking months after, you know, and then her efficiency was just through the roof. Her patient care team was so happy because they weren't having to spend so much time on the phone for non-medical emergencies. They were able to focus on the things they really loved and that they were excellent at. So she messaged me and said, hey, are you interested in an investor? And I was like, yeah, only if you'll be my medical director too. So she's our board certified plastic surgeon medical director. And now we have 3 more of the providers in that same practice of 9 providers. And we are in all of their surgeries. Every surgery they do, it's mandatory that you have POP. And so that is probably, I think, what's going to happen with everyone. Right now, we're in a pilot with a very large provider because they want to see how does what you do compare to what we already do. Because a lot of these amazing providers are like, we already do this. But when we got the breakdown of their processes and I sent it to my chief strategy operations officer, who I call mom, she's really my mom. I was like, she was like, this is okay. She's like, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done here. And so that actually brought up a new model that if we get for those larger offices closer to being involved, we want to see what their processes are because we can really then see the gap and show them how we can fill the gap and turn their 4 or 5 star into 6 star. Because what people in surgery only look at sometimes as a good result is the outcome. Okay, well, he got out of surgery. He didn't come back. He had a great surgery experience.
No news is good news.
Yeah, no news is good news. But that just meant that, like you, whether, you know, not sure how deep you struggle with it, but a lot of people are just suffering in silence and they don't want to call their doctor or their office because what can they do about it? But that is the truth. What can they do about it? They're surgeons or care providers. They're not therapists. And so having that resource available as a part of your surgery experience, as a department of your office, as a extension, and not just some third service. If you know our partners, we say to them all the time, one team, one goal. We are one team. We are not a third party service. This is no, we are right next to you in your office. We are your virtual office. That's what we are, because that's extremely important. And so that is going to continuously be the challenge. And then once we've been able to penetrate the full 25% of surgeons that are in private practice, and we start going into those hospitals and those PE situations, you know, it'll be education all over again. But what we're finding is that we can show them how it's affecting their bottom line as well. Whether it's soft, it's like what it appears to be soft, but when there's friction in all departments, because you have a high anxiety patient on the loose times 10, because you have 10 of them, that's a lot. And we want to show how we can come in and eliminate that friction because of the support that we're able to give in a very structured way.
Do you find that treatment acceptances go up? Have you guys done any studies on that? Like if we better engage the patient early on and inform them, get them to become a partner in this treatment rather than a subject, that actually results in more confident patients wanting to move forward with treatment that they may have been hesitant to jump forward with?
Yes. And dozens of times to this point, we've seen that without our services, they would not have had surgery. Because sometimes the fear, anxiety, and unpreparedness take over the ability to even have surgery. So yes, 100%.
So I think they've definitely chatted through some of the benefits here on the oral surgeon or the surgeon's side. What's the work involved? Like everything comes at a cost. What is this time involvement? You know, everything sounds great until you hear the rubber hits the road and you got to change these processes. You got to implement these new documentations or, you know, information. What's that look like for an onboarding perspective?
So when it comes to onboarding, we basically start with a 1-hour onboarding with the entire care team to introduce the model. Because believe it or not, it's the providers that you have to really convince, like, okay, this will work for me. But they're not the ones who make it work. Who make it work are the care team providers. So the patient care coordinators, really, those are the main ones on that side. If they don't believe in it, it's not going to work because it's their responsibility to introduce it to the patient. And so we do an onboarding with the entire team. Then we do a separate onboarding that takes about 30 minutes just for the patient care coordinators with Dr. Rednum's patient care coordinators, because they have now been doing this for almost 2 years. They've heard every single obstacle objection you can think of, from insurance patients to non. And so they're helping them understand quicker to not have to go through those mistakes. This is what you're going to hear. This is what your response can be. And then in either way, we meet with them once every 2 weeks for the first 8 weeks for about 30 to 45 minutes, hour if need be. And then once we get into a rhythm, it's once a month. And then once we get into an even greater rhythm, it's once a quarter. And a lot of times we're not creating new processes unless we are bringing on more surgeries, because sometimes they'll start with one demographic and then expand to another. So it really depends on the office, but I will say that it's very much so a plug and play. The best way to do this is to introduce it to the patient as something that you absolutely love, recommend, and the reason why it's a part of the practice is because you believe in it. And then we take it from there. And what we've been able to see is that the information that they provide to us, because we talk to them more, we can then pass to the office so that they can feel even more connected to that patient. If they just take a moment to read the notes, they'll see that, you know, something happened in their life, positive or negative, that they can reference during the next meeting and feel even more connected to the patient, because we're talking to them 3 to 4 times more than what the office is talking to them. So if they can get 3 to 4 times more information without having to spend 3 times more of the time, then that is the benefit. The biggest workload is on us, Josh, Pop. Mm-hmm.
But that's it, sounding like you guys do all the heavy lifting.
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly what we do. We do all the heavy lifting. But, you know, it's a funny thing. A lot of people feel validated and find their identity in doing heavy lifting, even if it's working hard and not working smart.
Well,
so
I also don't think these are mutually exclusive ideas. You know, I tell people ask me what my job is. You know, what's a CEO do of a tech company? I go, honestly, I repeat the same thing over and over and over again, because the first 10 times you didn't hear it clearly enough. And, you know, I think that's kind of what you're doing, right? Is you're taking that core message that the provider knows they need to deliver. And in their own way, with their own personality, they convince themselves they do deliver that message. But you can be that advocate who repeats it in their ear. This is a procedure that people do all the time. This is something that has a high success rate. This is going to accomplish your why. And, you know, they can say it in a manner which is more receptive for a patient to hear, rather than like, I need to re-inform things that the provider's not doing. I think a lot of times the provider is doing it, just like a lot of times, you know, I am saying it, but it's not until you say it every single week in front of the whole company for 6 months that people are like, oh, this is actually something we're doing. This isn't just a flash in the pan great idea. This is the trajectory we're on. This is the direction we're going. And there's a conviction in that. And I think when you leverage a party like yours, like a service like yours, you are further doubling down on that commitment that this isn't just something that we say we do, we live it, which is so great to see that on the patient experience side.
Yes. And it allows them to do it and know that it's really going to be done. Because what we have found is that providers will say, well, we do that already. We do that already. But when you break it down and we take a deep dive into what you're actually doing, you know, it's not the same. And so, you know, you can't just give a patient 50 documents and be like, okay, read this. And then say, well, we explain that to them. No, you give them something that you're not sure that they read. Like, someone needs to be there to break it down for them, repeat it, and really explain it in a way that they can receive the information. You know, it's so funny because as the CEO and founder of like a healthcare company, you know, I'm still not a surgeon. I didn't go to medical school. You know, I'm a very intelligent person, but it wasn't through university. So there are still some words and some phrases and some things that I don't understand. I'm not ashamed to say, what does that mean? But a lot of people aren't that vulnerable to say, what does that mean? They'll just nod their head and be like, okay. So having a concierge that says, do you understand this? How do you receive information best? How would this best be explained to you? Would you like a video maybe that will show you illustration? How can I best serve you so that you can really digest this? Offices just don't have time to do that. And we're not knocking them. We're telling them you don't need to make time to do that. You just need to make room for Pa.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. I mean, I'm sure there's a bunch of stories that flood the mind on, you know, patients' lives that are transformed through POP and you know, this treatment they're getting done. Maybe anyone you want to share, someone that just kind of, you know, you wake up in the morning outside of yourself, because, you know, that will only take you so far. Is there other people that you've like, man, it's Susan or it's John, it's, you know, this person came to me and they didn't think they could meet the weight loss goals required for surgery, and patient POP gave them that motivation, that courage to every day, you know, take on that good fight to, because my understanding is sometimes there's requirements before you're even able to get the treatment, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So there's two that come to mind, but one is Shabranda, because her surgeon reached out to me. He's one of our partners. And I absolutely love him because he's been a bariatric surgeon for 20 years, but he knew there's two kinds of providers. They see the need and they want to make a difference, or they see the need and they go like this, they mm-hmm. cover their eyes, you know, and he saw the need and he wants to make a difference. And so he reached out to me and was like, you know, she has a 70 BMI. We need to get this down. She has a very, you know, poor attitude towards everything and doesn't have that great of a support system. Would you start working with her even sooner? And so I said, yeah, we put a team with her 5 months before her procedure and start working with her monthly in nutrition, mental health. You know, not only were we able to get her below a 50 BMI in time for her surgery, but her attitude, her adherence, the way she was treating the staff, the way she was following the protocols was completely different. And then she had her surgery, and 2 months after, her best friend died. And a lot of times after weight loss surgery, this can be triggering. And, you know, we saw that she contacted her mental health coach and walked through it and talked with her nutrition. And I was able to, about 6 weeks after that, do her video testimonial, which is on our site. And she said, you know, if it wasn't for Pop, I wouldn't have got through that. You know, I would have gone back to my old habits. But because of those things that I learned from my mental health coach, you know, I was able to pivot and I was able to overcome. And that's really what it's about. And then on the provider side, that woman was not having surgery without Pop. It just was not going to happen. She didn't have the circle. And here's the thing. Let's say you do have the circle. You have the wife. You have the parents. It is still not in their skill set to be what a licensed professional who has thousands of hours of experience in your particular case can be. You know, and we shouldn't ask them to be either. You know, and that's another part.
Let's be real, right? Sometimes those very people are the enablers of the reason why you need this to begin with. I mean, we've probably all seen those TV shows where, you know, the spouse or the guardian is kind of the culprit and, you know, they are doing, I always find it very funny how people have this self-talk, and this self-talk is totally irrational. It's people, you know, whenever someone tells you there's something tragic that happens, they have cancer, or they have this illness, I always ask, like, was there something that you kind of just thought about and you just kind of ignored it and brushed? And almost every time someone's like, yeah, I had this or I had that, or, you know, I felt like I need to get my will in order. It's like, well, you know, like that should have been, but, you know, you just self-talk yourself. Oh, it's not a big deal. Everyone has these feelings. And, you know, I think very similarly, so that lack of confidence that I can do this, I'm worthy to get this treatment, I'm, you know, able to accomplish this goal. But when you have that advocate, you can reverse that self-talk to be uplifting, to be positive, to be encouraging, to achieve, you know, what you want. And I think that's such a powerful tool that people don't get. And when you don't get it, it actually has the opposite effect of you're self-talking yourself down. I think, you know, often it's just that one voice, that one sense of, you know, it's the baby step, right? You know, how do you eat a rhinoceros or whatever my son keeps telling me? It's like one bite at a time. It's like that baby step, one foot in front of the other. And it's really hard to get that from a busy clinic. It's hard to get that from, you know, a parent or a guardian or a spouse. You really, to your point, need someone that is what they do every day. That's their job. That's how they contribute to society.
They love to do it, and they love to do it. That part's important, right? It's not just a job for them. It's their purpose.
That's so awesome. I love to hear the people behind the story, because obviously when you deal with a large group, it often those individual stories, which is really what makes this worthwhile, get lost. Now, I know you did have recently a really exciting announcement. I wanted to ask you a little about that. Maybe you could share with our listeners what you've just launched.
So I was announced a top 500 female founder by Inc. I could not believe it. I mean, I guess I could, I can, but it's still like one of those things. Like,
just
I've won awards before.
You can do it. And
I know, but, you know, it's for so long. I was like, does anybody understand this? Like, this is a big deal. This matters, you know? And I remember one surgeon saying to me, he said, if anybody's going to do this, it's you. He's like, you just don't give up, you know, and I don't, especially when I believe in something. And so to be recognized in that way, it was like that kind of validation that I needed, that I was doing the right thing, that I was on the right track, that I was fighting for the right reasons. And of course, it gave us more opportunities, you know, to expose what we're doing. And so it's just really exciting to put that up as, you know, hey, I accomplished this, and show my kids, of course, like my daughter and my husband, he's from Mexico, and you know, he's not really in tune with all of the thing in the US, but he's been watching a lot of business podcasts. And so when I said it was Inc, he's like, no way. You know, he has a very thick accent, but he was like very just like talking to his friends. Oh, my wife, you know, she's in the top 500, you know, and it was like,
you got that accent pretty good.
If you met him, you'd be like, you sound just like him. Yeah, he's we've been together long enough. But yeah, it's really exciting. I'm so excited. Can't wait for the
congratulations. Honestly, it's such an achievement to get recognized, especially, you know, in the early days of starting a new company. It's never easy. And often it doesn't feel like the progress is linear, and it feels like there's constantly hurdles. And I know for myself, I do have that feeling of people, you know, are usually trying to be pretty complimentary in, you know, what you've accomplished when they talk to you. And it's like, man, I feel like I should just be 10 feet further ahead. No matter how far I am, I think of the potential of where I could be. And, you know, to take those moments and to accept the recognition that others give you is such an important process in building something great, because otherwise it just feels like too much of a grind all the time. And so huge congratulations.
I agree with that.
It's super exciting to see how you're, you know, shaking up this industry, and you're speaking and advocating on behalf of patients, which I think is such a noble cause and something that I, you know, obviously want to support. And is there anything you want our listeners to take away? Anything you want to share with them before we wrap up here?
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. And anyone listening that's going on a transformational journey or knows someone who's going on a transformational journey, please check us out at www.poprecoverysystems.com. We have a provider tab and a patient tab, so you can enjoy the experience that fits you. But it's for anyone going on any kind of transformational journey, from high-risk surgery, GLP-1 medications. It's always better to do it with a team than do it alone. And that's it. I want them to come find out more about us and spread the word that we exist.
What are the chances that oral surgeons could get signed up with a program like this? I feel like there's some overlap my listeners might want to know more about.
Yeah, you know, I would love to. I actually put on my list to look into that, because I'm going to have oral surgery. And so I think I already see in the front end where there's some gaps.
No pun intended.
I'm going to go, yeah. Yeah. And I do believe that there is a space for it. So If you are an oral surgeon and you're interested in exploring that with me, please, then check out the website, go to the surgeon side. And a lot of it, I believe, will still apply to you as an oral surgeon, because there are gaps in the patient experience in any surgery, especially, and you still go under when you're having oral surgery as well. And there's anxiety in that, and understanding exactly the process you're going through. So I would love to talk to anyone who's interested in even just having a conversation, because I believe that's going to be on our list.
I mean, I have a strong hypothesis that I believe to be true, is that oral surgeons and plastic surgeons have way more in common than either of them do to a walk-in clinic or a GP dentist. So I think there's tremendous overlap. I think there's a huge opportunity, but also, you know, I want to encourage you to stay focused and keep shaking up the market you're in, because I think there's a lot of need in that space. And I'm just happy to hear that you're fulfilling it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Laura, for being here. I really appreciate you being on the podcast with us and, you know, informing our listeners about how important the patient experience is and how, you know, POP Recovery Systems is really readjusting the landscape of what providers can give to their patients, but most importantly, what patients can expect in their treatment planning and throughout their treatment care. So really thank you so much for being here, giving us your time and your wisdom and your knowledge. And like I said before, if anyone has any questions, please feel free to reach out to Laura. We love what she's doing over there, and wish her the very best.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. And that's everything for this week's Patient Experience Blueprint. If you have any other questions, please check out the description, and we look forward to hearing from you soon. Bye for now.